I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN Podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm your host today, Jessica Kesselman. So great to have you all joining us on this very hot, steamy day in New York in August. I am also very excited to welcome back our guest today, Felice Thorpe of Felice Foods. Felice has years of experience as a national sales director. She has helped launch products into the marketplace. She is somebody who has worked in the cheese industry in many different capacities, and she knows sales. And I am so happy to have Felice here today to talk specifically about forecasting, which, let's face it, we all love to make cheese, we love to eat cheese, but for a company to really be viable and thrive, they really need to get into the nitty-gritty of forecasting and projections. And so we're going to get into that with Felice Thorpe. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd.
Great to be here.
So you and I recently saw each other at the American Cheese Society Conference, and that's where we first started kind of talking about this topic, because it's something that, like, I think everybody's, you know, concerned with. And maybe there are times of year where they're more concerned with it than others, but it was definitely, you know, on the minds of a lot of people thinking about after the American Cheese Society Conference, starting to look ahead at Q4 and beyond into 2023 and maybe beyond that. So can we start with just defining some terms when we're talking about forecasting? Sometimes people say projections. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Just so we're all speaking the same language, so to speak. Forecasting and projections are used interchangeably, so you can use those essentially the same. Some other important terms that are related around this subject are budgeting, and also I want to touch upon profitability versus revenue. So just to kind of get into the nitty gritty, like you say, revenue is the total amount of money generated by the sale of your cheese. Profitability is also can be called net profit or your bottom line. And that is the money you have left over after you take out all of your expenses it costs associated to make and generate your cheese. You can find all of these layers pretty easily online if you Google them, but it's typically shared internally as a document called an income statement. So profitability is really what we're looking for. Revenue is great, but at the end of the day, I want to have a profitable company. And I really believe that real success is positive cash flow, which is profitability. So budgeting is assigning a purpose to the money that you have right now. Can you currently make payroll? Can you purchase new equipment? Where within the business the money needs to be allocated is part of your budgeting. Forecasting, or as we mentioned, projections can be used the same way, is what will you do with the money you don't have yet? So what does your projected revenue from a brand new account look like? What is the likely outcome of your future sales? What are your financial needs to meet your goals? And forecasting should be looked at monthly or quarterly. So all of these cash terms are equally as important. But essentially what we want to do is put them into buckets of past, present, and future. So what cash did you have to start off with? What do you have today? And what cash will you potentially have in the future?
I can imagine that people, you know, in a, you know, who are building a growing company, and that could be, you know, growing from like the onset, they're in the beginning stages of their company, or they're, you know, they've had some success, they've been rolling along for several years, maybe they're in their, you know, they're towards the end of their first 5-year plan, and they're, you know, looking at the next phase, or maybe they're even established, you know, been working in the industry for, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. I have a feeling that, like most things, we can get really stuck in the present. And because the unknown, it's always easier to deal with what's known rather than unknown. And I can also, like when you mentioned talking about, can you currently make payroll? Can you purchase new equipment? Your machine just died and like the wrapper went down, or the vat has a leak, or like that it, I mean, I could just imagine getting really stuck in the present. So like, how do you balance those three different phases at once, past, present, future?
Well, you have to look at your business holistically as a sum of all of those parts. So for example, you were talking about, you know, are you and just an emerging brand, or are you a brand that is established launching a new product, right? Either way, you have to have demand. So you have to have, what's the market potential for your brand or for the product? Production, how am I going to make this product? Procurement, what supplies do I need to make this product? And cash flow, how much cash do I need to make this happen? So the past, present, future is a sum of all of those parts. And I find it easiest to kind of digest that process when you put them into individual buckets, and then you kind of start just analyzing each bucket and breaking down, you know, all the different parts to make the sum.
And one of the things that you said to me in a previous conversation was with forecasting, that these plans are almost always wrong, that it's not about being right. It's about being less wrong.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit about that, and maybe an example?
Yeah. So one of my favorite business quotes is actually by Mike Tyson, ironically, and his quote is, "Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face." And I feel like we all need to sort of keep that in mind as we're making these plans and these forecasting plans, because we're all approaching it with the best intention. And a forecast is an art, a science, and an educated guess, right? So the art is maybe your history around the industry and, you know, talking to your friends and how are they doing? And so that's the art part. The science is the data. So looking at the data around your category, the data around your type of cheese, potentially, you know, if it's a cheddar, artisanal cheddar, trying to find category data, open source category data online. And then an educated guess is, again, just, you know, looking at all the parts of your sum. So what is the market potential? What supplies do I need? That all goes into the educated guess. And then I just want to say another great quote by Roosevelt, which is, "Comparison is the thief of joy," which is just sort of to remind everybody that each individual business is so different, and what your goals are as a business is so different. And so it's important to keep in mind that we can look at our competition or, you know, look at other founders or brands, but sometimes comparison can kind of take away from what your mission is for your own company. So just keep that in mind that, you know, what you're doing is individually unique to your company.
Yeah. And I can imagine that there's probably a lot of pressure to stay positive all the time, when you are forecasting, when you are looking, at the unknowns, right? That, you know, you want to stay positive, you want to stay optimistic. But you know, the unknown is scary. So I guess the other buckets are your knowns and your unknowns, and having the data, which actually goes back to the last time you and I talked. We were talking about the importance of data and the availability of data that's out there now, that can help people figure out what's happening in the marketplace and if they are heading in the right direction with the right brand or the right pack mix or the right customer. The right price. I find something that is really, really, really helpful is just, you know, doing price surveys.
Yeah.
Just getting out there and seeing how much
observational data, right? We talked about how important observational data is, and people, if you don't get out into the marketplace, you really can lose touch of that. And some data is gleaned through conversations, right? So speaking to a buyer or category manager about what are the velocity expectations of this category, of this set. And that's a great way. I mean, that is one of the methods of finding or doing forecasting is finding out what that expectation is for velocity. And that could be essentially your minimum forecast.
So you said earlier in this conversation when we first started that you believe that people should be doing forecasting monthly or quarterly?
Yeah, if you look at sort of large business events potentially that could happen, that, you know, it does happen. It's just part of business is, when those business events change, it could be, we've talked about that crazy TikTok fetish shortage at ACS. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about something wacky like that. If you're a feta manufacturer and you've got like this incredible event that happens like that, that's completely out of the blue, that is going to absolutely change your potential forecast. And that is the type of thing that, you know, your month to month, it could change depending on what the need is for something like that. So yeah, I like to look at revise, massage monthly, quarterly.
And some of the other factors that can impact your sales projections. So you talked about the social media viral explosion of that feta recipe that took TikTok and Instagram by storm last year, and suddenly nobody had any feta because everybody bought it all.
Yeah.
And so there's social media when things go viral. What are some other factors that can impact your sales projections?
Weather. There are so many horrible weather, seasonality of product, right? If you're creating a cheese that's maybe consumed mostly around the holidays, economic forecasts, if you're, you know, potentially moving into a recession or the economy is booming, general category growth or shrinkage, you know, like the feta category grew after that TikTok episode, which is crazy. Internal management changes at an account that you have no control over. So, you know, they've decided to shrink your category of cheese or grow your category of cheese, or they have a new buyer at the desk, or, you know, that there are so many factors that are out of your control. I mean, we try to manage what we can control, but we all remember that image of those giant cargo ships sitting off of Long Beach with, you know, packaging supplies on them and all kinds of supplies that people needed sitting there months and months. So that's an external factor that no one has control over that could potentially affect a forecast. So just keeping all of those factors in mind. And, you know, that's why I do think it's good to address it, to look back at forecasts monthly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, I think we're all getting a lesson in forecasting as we're, you know, watching the impact of several of the things that you listed out on supply chains. There's the weather. There's, mm-hmm. I think the last one I heard about was the mustard crops. Mm-hmm. We're seeing, then there was the sriracha, because of the shortage of peppers, because I believe that was also weather related. We know that there are still some supply chain issues with just product being able to reach ports that on time. And we're seeing also that some in agriculture, you know, some industries and farmers in certain sectors made their planting, their plans for crops based on projections that were accurate at the time, because let's face it, it's been very unpredictable the last few years. Yeah. So there is not a lot of consistency in the data. I don't know if that means the data is less reliable or more reliable, but when you have a cheese that takes a year or two to age, and I'm thinking of like Parmigiano Reggiano, and you are trying to plan out based on projections that you're making in 2020 or 2021, you know, I just think, you know, it's interesting that you talk about planning or looking at your projections monthly or quarterly, when sometimes you're looking at your projections on a product that takes, you know, 9 to 12 to 18 months before it can be sold. That's an interesting conundrum.
There is a myriad of unknowns, that's for sure. And it's hard coming from a sales perspective, because there is significant internal and external pressure to have an optimistic forecast. You know, every business wants the sales team to say great things about the future sales of the product. And you feel that pressure of trying to balance the, you know, optimism and kind of pushing the envelope of sales potential, and then also keeping in mind, you know, all of the nuances and peaks and valleys that you can have with it. So I think that really getting as many people involved in this conversation from the very beginning internally is so important. You know, production should be involved in forecasting, obviously, operations, procurement. If you're a farmstead, you know, the farmer, the sales team, the marketing team, you know, it might turn out that the marketing team is like, well, you guys, we don't have the budget to participate in that trade show this year. And, you know, your expectation was that we were going to get some great sales from, you know, participating in that trade show. So everyone really needs to be looped into this conversation. It's obviously not just a sales conversation.
And there definitely is, I believe now with social media and with more, I'm not just referring to like TikTok and Instagram, but also just the plethora of food writers and food influencers and the amount of marketing that retailers can do now on various platforms, there's a lot more influence, more ways that the market can be influenced. Because when you were talking about how much, you know, we have to think about what we can control. And yeah. I pre-cheese, when I was a program director, we would often look at this tool of being able to manage our work where we had concentric circles. And there was in the center, the smallest circle was what you can control. And then right around that was your sphere of influence, which was a little bit bigger. And then the largest circle that kind of went around both of those was stuff you just could not do anything about.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And that ring of influence seems to, I don't know, it feels like it's getting larger with the amount of voices that can influence the market with posting a recipe or appearing on a YouTube channel or, I don't know, if you're in the right place at the right time at a restaurant.
Yeah, or dietary trends, right? So yes. Keto or low sodium or high fat, or, I can't even keep up with all of them, but I'm sure they potentially affect forecasting at certain points.
Right. Right. For sure. Well, we're going to take a little break to hear from our sponsor for this episode of Cutting the Curd. Thank you very much to our sponsor. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about approaches to working out forecasting. And we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
And we're back with our guest today, Felice Thorpe from Felice Foods. And we are talking about forecasting and sales, because we make cheese, then we sell the cheese. And we just want to keep selling and growing and keep this industry thriving. So let's talk about approaches to working out forecasting. You have two common methods that you wanted to talk about. And I know one of them, I think you prefer over the other. Was there, mm-hmm. you have a preference? Okay.
Yeah. So the most two common methods, forecasting is also sort of essentially revenue growth management. And this is managing your revenue through an increase in availability of the right product, the right pack mix, the right customer, the right price at the right time. And that's a lot of rights that need to go right, right? But that's what we have to do to make this all work. And the two types of methods that I use to help with revenue growth management is one I'm less fond of, but it's pretty popular, which is a market share method of forecasting. And that's basically looking at all the products in the marketplace that are in your category or your type of product, and then estimating the potential market share that you could have of that. It's a very loose estimate. I don't completely believe it works, but it gives, it's a good kind of big picture way to look at potential profitability. The clearer picture of this is bottoms up retail store forecasting. And I believe this is more accurate, and it's basically, you estimate how many number of stores you're going to potentially go into, and then how many units of your products sold per store per week. And then that you multiply that out, and that's the total estimated units. And the how many units sold per store per week, that is going back to that conversation of that's so important with the buyer or the category manager about the velocity expectations. So when you're selling into a retailer, asking them, you know, from the get-go, hey, how many units per week do I need to sell to stay in this place? And that gives you your minimum required projection, right? So you want to sell more than that, but you know that you can't dip below that, because if you dip below that, there's a threat of being discontinued. So that's a pretty accurate right. way to determine your forecast.
And it's funny because buyers are doing forecasts too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, so you as a producer are doing a forecast. The people you're selling to, they're doing their own forecasting and making decisions based on that. And so, from a sales perspective, one thing that's always so important too is finding out when those schedules are. When are those review schedules? When are those launch schedules? Because it can help you kind of figure out, if you're going after placement with a certain customer, a certain, retailer or e-commerce platform, or even just like getting into like a really large farmer's market, like the green market in mm-hmm. New York City is huge. That can be big volume for people if you're a certain size customer or a certain size cheesemaker. So, but knowing, like anticipating, we're going to try to land this account. And then if we do, that means it launches in this month. It's so important to be able to have all that information. So, always thinking, X number of months ahead. And again, that's part of the unknown, right? It's that uncertainty. You're planning for a future, one of several possible futures, I guess is the best way to
And that's a unique, cheese is unique to other consumer packaged goods because, like you mentioned before, you've got your variables of the fresh cheese and the aged cheese. So it's probably more similar to the wine industry, where you've got your wine that maybe is to be consumed right away, sold and consumed right away. And then you've got the wine that's going to be cellared, right? So those are, the time frame is different than a granola or a potato chip that has like a 6-month shelf life, and that's the beginning, middle, and end of that, the life of that product, whereas an aged cheese can go on and on and on. So it's definitely, there's more variables in forecasting cheese versus other consumer packaged goods.
So not everybody that gets into creating, a product is coming to this with an MBA, right? And we all come to things, from our own path. But there are a lot of tools available that are available, like, pretty easily to help people in their various stages of where they're at with the size of their company and the scope of their forecasting. What are some of your favorite tools that you would refer people to?
Yeah, I got turned on to a great budgeting app for small business. And this was turned on to me by a CFO who uses it herself. It's called YNAB, which stands for You Need a Budget. And it's a personal budgeting tool, but it's also a small business budgeting tool. It's great. Like I said, it's an app, so it's really user-friendly. A great app or software for small business, also HubSpot, has a forecasting feature in it. Zoho is also a small business CRM that has a forecasting feature. And then an operations inventory forecasting software for small business, which actually integrates with QuickBooks. So your finance team, or if you are the finance team, you'll appreciate it, is called Fiddle. So that's for inventory forecasting, which again is small business focused. Tools and resources, they're becoming easier and easier. They're becoming, less expensive. Most companies don't need anything as robust as like a Salesforce for forecasting.
Right.
So in lieu of a Salesforce, try a HubSpot or a Zoho.
So going back just a little bit to our definitions, so we, the forecasting projections, we talked about how those are terms that are used interchangeably. And then can you talk a little bit more about how this looks in relation to budgeting? Because I'm wondering, is there a way for a company to prepare? When is there suddenly this time in the life of a company where they suddenly realize that they have to start forecasting? Because budgeting, it seems like to be the thing you do first, right? It's this is how you make your company run. When do you do this? When do you shift gears and start moving from or adding on forecasting and projections to your budgeting practice? Is it when you decide to write your business plan? Is it during a profit assessment? And what is a profit assessment?
So every company needs to do forecasting, because forecasting gives insight into your future budget. So I think that, it's kind of like the chicken or the egg paradox, right? But they're definitely integrated. Again, it will give you kind of a crystal ball into, can I hire that new salesperson, or what are my future packaging needs or equipment needs, and all of that involves cash, right? So this is all about cash. what cash did I have in the past? Maybe as you were starting off, what cash do I have today? What cash am I going to have in the future? And just to elaborate a little bit more on when you do this sort of in your yearly life cycle of a business, is I'm not a tax expert and I'm not an accounting expert or even a finance expert, but it's all done within a fiscal year. And a fiscal year is a 1 year period of time that companies use for financial reporting. And it is interesting because a fiscal year, Jessica, you probably noticed this yourself working with different brands, how different companies have different fiscal years. And it's always sort of confusing to me. I mean, I understand the theory and I understand it, but it's always like you have to sort of retrain your brain as to what their specific fiscal year is. And it really essentially comes down to, like, if you look at schools, that's industry specific, their fiscal year begins and ends according to the school calendar year. So that kind of gives you an idea into how you as a cheese brand should set up your fiscal year. So some cheese companies will use a fiscal year that is based upon their revenue cycle. So if you have a large portion of earnings coming in around the holidays, you can end your fiscal year, for example, the end of January. And that's fairly common. Retailers do that as well. A lot of large retailers end their fiscal year at the end of January because the holidays are so important to them. So, right. So we all need to be doing forecasting, and we all have our unique, fiscal year that we're doing all this money work in. And that will be dependent on your financial workflow.
So one of the cheesemakers that I was thinking of when we were talking about fiscal years recently was a company that actually their fiscal year ended. April. So kind of like it was a time where they could catch their breath to try and end their, to have their fiscal year, start and end around December, January was too stressful. Because it meant getting through Q4 holiday, just too much was going on. And it was not a time for them to be able to focus on anything else. Then I knew somebody who does it in June. I do think that there is it's what works for you. And that was eye-opening to me. It was the first time I had ever heard a fiscal year ending at some other time.
I mean, IRS knows, that's the most important thing, right?
Right. As long as they get their money. What is a profit assessment? It's okay. But you were talking about where it like helps you focus your attention.
So one thing I do with my clients that that is really, really important work that you can easily do this on your own is a SKU SWOT analysis. So I'm just going to kind of start from the beginning of how I do a profit assessment. And you do a SWOT analysis just to kind of refresh everyone's memory is a strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat. Per each SKU. And again, working through this conversation through every potential stakeholder in the company, what is a threat to production is going to be a different answer from marketing's answer, right? So getting all of those answers and then doing a profitability assessment based upon the profit margin of each SKU. Going back to, profitability is what we all want. Revenue is great, but we need to be profitable. So which SKUs are profitable SKUs? And then looking at that profitability assessment, that SWOT analysis, and then building kind of a portfolio strategy. So that's essentially, okay, we've done our due diligence on everything we make, and maybe we're going to pause production on this product because it's currently not profitable, or maybe we're going to discontinue this product because we don't have the target audience for it. And then that's your portfolio strategy. So basically, you've got your, you know, new improved products that you're going to sell, and it's just a much cleaner way to make those decisions.
I feel like I just took a crash course in in sales again. I love it. And I know there's just like, this is like the tip of the iceberg. And I hope that they're, you know, for people who are listening, that they're coming away with something that's resonating, that makes them think, you know, that they want to go take a deeper dive or maybe examine their practice, see what they're doing. And maybe check out some of those tools that you mentioned. But this is, you know, this is like the parallel conversation we have to have alongside talking about making cheese, because we want people to be able to continue making cheese. And I know there are people out there who are, you know, looking at, some growth and, or have, you know, big plans, for their next phase or their next act. And I hope that today's conversation, gave them some ideas or some tools that they can use, to help them grow. But I really appreciate you coming back.
Yeah.
To Cutting the Curd, Felice.
Yeah, it's always great to have you on. And I love your optimism. I am super optimistic about our, in general, about our future in this industry. I think that things are only looking up. And as the economy tightens, don't retreat. Please don't retreat. Please just focus on your target audience and double down on your portfolio strategy. Understand that, you know, understand all of your costs. And when I say costs, I also mean opportunity costs, which I think we tend to sort of ignore, which is essentially when you choose to work with a channel of business, you're choosing to spend time there instead of somewhere else. And understanding what those opportunity costs are. And yeah, my hypothesis is that you'll do fine. If you'll do more than fine, you know, if you put this work, this homework into it, including forecasting and budgeting and really making your end goal being a profitable company.
I love it. That's such a great way to end on a very optimistic note. Thank you again so much, Felice.
Thank you.
And thank you everyone for tuning into another podcast episode of Cutting the Curd. And again, check out our sponsor, check out our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and also find us on Instagram. And I look forward to being back here with you all soon.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.